You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have Alistair McLeod with me once in a while. Again, it's been a little while since Alistair. We usually have him on every 4 weeks or so, and it seems longer than that. Maybe it's not, but it seems it, because it's always so good to have him with us and to go over some of his work, some of his ideas that he publishes that you can and all should read at goldmoney.com. He publishes every week. It's usually, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 page essay on some current topic in the markets that's very important to keep up with, and that's why I think it's essential reading. So it's goldmoney.com every Thursday, and that's at the research page there at Gold Money. Thank you for joining me again, Alistair.
Thank you for asking me, Jay.
It's really good to have you with us, and I want to talk about your inflation roadmap piece. That's probably all we'll get to today. There's so many other things I'd love to talk to you about, but that was published on the 3rd of December. And you start out by saying on this piece, you said, and I quote, "It is beginning to be obvious that global economic woes extend beyond COVID lockdowns and that monetary inflation for the dollar as the common foundation for other fiat currencies whose issuers face similar problems will continue to accelerate," end of quote. So you've certainly, Alistair, been on top of this, believing that it's much beyond, much deeper than COVID. I remember you talking about last year, the repo problem in September of 2019. But what evidence do you see that our leaders, people, you know, the Keynesians, the people that are drinking all the Kool-Aid, the mainstream Kool-Aid, are starting to realize that maybe there's something beyond COVID here? What evidence do you see that they're seeing that, and what are they seeing?
I see no evidence of them admitting it at all. They seem to think that the only problem is COVID. But as we have discussed, before COVID came along, there were other very significant problems, one of which was the end of the bank credit cycle, the expansionary phase of the bank credit cycle. And quite obviously, the banks ran out of balance sheet capacity in September 2019, when they had to go into the repo market in order to keep their books straight. And there was that crisis in the repo market. That was the first thing. And the second thing, of course, actually happened a little bit before that, and that is the trade tariff war between America and China, which was really the subject for 2018. Mm-hmm. The combination of those two things on their own are really potentially destructive. And one has to remember, or just do not forget, for goodness sake, that in 1929, you had exactly the same coincidence of the end of the expansionary phase of the bank credit cycle and the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, which raised tariffs by roughly 20%, not too dissimilar to Trump's tariffs in many respects. And, of course, 1929 was the start of the Wall Street collapse, which took it down 90%, 89% to be precise, between September 1929, which was the month before Congress passed the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, and the middle of 1932. And, of course, that was followed by the Great Depression. So putting COVID to one side, we already have the ingredients for a very difficult economic outlook, and one in which rarely on current policies just cannot be avoided. So we now have COVID. We've had the first stimulus, which basically meant that in the second half of your last fiscal year, two-thirds of government expenditure was covered by inflationary financing through QE and one-third through taxation. So already you are on a hyperinflationary course. We then are about to get some stage, once the presidential situation is resolved, a second stimulus. And that is going to be at least as large as the first stimulus. It must do. And when I say at least as large, I mean at least as large in real terms. In other words, the numbers will reflect, if you like, the earlier dilution in order to get the same effect. So you've got this acceleration, if you like, going on. And there is also another problem, and that is that, you know, if we go back to the time when banks were running out of balance sheet, they were at that stage, you know, they needed more equity. They can't raise equity because equity prices for the banks in the main are less than book value. And of course, a bank would be absolutely crazy to try and raise money at less than book value. So the banks, in a sense, are trapped. But the problem that COVID created in industry was it seized up the supply chains. And that problem is now coming about again. If you look at M2 minus M1, which gives you an approximation of bank lending, in other words, you take out all the, you know, the sort of the very short term stuff like, you know, checking accounts in the banks, cash, you know, money market funds, things like that. Take that out of the M2 figure. Yeah. And you can see that M2 minus that has contracted very sharply.
Yes.
In November. Now, at the same time, if you look at M1, that has actually jumped in that month very, very substantially. And I think I'm right in saying that in the last 2 weeks of November, M1 increased by 11.6%. I mean, this is enormous.
Yeah.
Interestingly, savings deposits fell by 88.5 billion, which is only about 0.75%. But it was the first fall we've seen in the savings deposits figures at the banks for some considerable time. So what we are seeing on the deposit side of the bank's balance sheet is a shift away from term loans, if you like, towards just checking accounts, the buildup of cash. Now, this tells me that people are getting ready to reduce their cash, if you like, the relationship between the cash they actually hold and the goods that they buy, because we all have a reserve of some sort to buy those things that we need tomorrow and those little emergency things that perhaps we hadn't budgeted for. The first thing that happens in a situation like this is that when people start moving out of the term loans, you know, the, if you like, the savings accounts into cash, then the next thing they do is they reduce that cash, and they reduce that cash by running out and buying things. So you can see that there is the potential for an acceleration in price inflation as a wave of buying out of, if you like, the deposit side of the bank's balance sheet, reflected in that M1 total, that is going to be unwound into the basic economy. But of course, it doesn't get unwound in total; it just gets unwound for individuals. If I've increased my level of checking account balances, let's say, then I'm going to get rid of that by buying something, and somebody else is going to get that money, and that will end up being deposited. Now, whether it gets deposited back into a checking account or a savings account, of course, at this stage, we don't know. But the trend is, if you have got too much money in the checking accounts, then that is going to get spent down in order to adjust the balance for ordinary people back to where they would normally require to hold balances, rather than to hold too much in the way of balances. Now, the other problem, if you look at the other side of the balance sheet, the bank lending side, this actually has contracted very sharply, very suddenly, and it is all to do with those supply chain problems. I don't know if you've noticed in the press recently, there have been stories about containers, all sitting in the Pacific Coast container ports in America. Uh-huh. We've got the same thing in Europe with containers in Rotterdam, Felixstowe, those big container hubs. They're just accumulating there. Some of them are just not shifting because they're being used by governments as storage. But the problem is that they're not getting back to China, India, wherever, in order to be loaded with the goods, you know, the spare parts, the consumer goods and everything else that we buy from Asia. So all the containers are in the wrong place. We've got problems in places like Los Angeles because delivery, you know, people, the road transport is being affected by drivers, getting COVID. So they're not shifting the containers as the logistics models basically said that they should. And you are also getting further disruption from something called rollovers. Now, a rollover is, you know, when you get your container and you say you take it down to the docks and it misses the ship, it rolls over onto the next shipment. So, but nobody quite knows what has rolled over and what hasn't rolled over. And so the whole thing is a logistics mess. Now, the reason I go on about this is because this logistics mess is basically the supply chain mess. And the supply chain mess, the other side of that is payments. The payments are not going through. So if you look at the current situation, which is reflected in the gross output numbers, which is really what supply chains are about, gross output between the end of last year and this year has fallen by some $4 trillion. Wow. Now, given that the fall in bank lending is of the order of 1.6 trillion, you can see there's probably something like another $2 trillion being absorbed by companies supplying things along that supply chain. So already we have got a very serious problem building up in the supply chain. So how does this affect our money supply? Well, the answer basically is that the one thing the Fed cannot permit is an economic slump. This supply chain problem is driving us into an economic slump because the banks suddenly have seen the light and think, oh my goodness, this is not something that's going to end immediately. This is something that has got legs. We must reduce our obligations, our balance sheet obligations. We must get down that loan book. Otherwise, we are just going to get killed by bad debts. So what does the Fed do? The Fed has somehow got to find a mechanism of replacing that contracting bank credit. So your narrow money has only just started taking off. It is going to, the increase in the quantity of Fed produced money, which is essentially that narrow money, M1, and the guarantees that the Fed is going to, you know, give to the banks, it's just going to become a hyperinflationary situation, obviously, as far as people are concerned. The reason I say obviously is that we've already talked on your program about hyperinflation already existing, the conditions for hyperinflation existing in the US monetary system as it is. We've got the second wave of COVID stimulus, and stimulus is completely the wrong word for it.
Yes.
Because it basically transfers wealth to the government. I mean, you know, you've got to be as blunt as that about what it does. And not only that, we now have the problem of the supply chain foul up, which is evidenced in container ports around the world. I mean, it's not just America. Believe you me, it's Europe, it's Asia. The whole thing is a huge, great mess. The supply chains have ground to a halt, and either the Fed and the US Treasury come to the rescue to some $34 trillion worth of supply chain mess in the US economy, or we go into the most dramatic slump we have seen since the 1930s, and potentially even worse than that. So what are they going to do? They're going to print money.
They're going to have to print money, and what you're saying is it's not going into long-term obligations. It's staying liquid. It's staying in that M1 category, I guess. And then, as you say, people push their money, or they get out of the longer-term obligations and put their assets into some sort of liquid form. They try to. Do I have that right? And also, if you could sort of help me understand why this supply chain problem has evolved. Is it, how directly related is it to COVID?
Well, it is very much related to COVID because what we want out of life in a COVID lockdown is completely different from what we want in a normal economic situation.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
sure.
You've got, you know, the retail industry has been killed, hospitality has been killed. Airlines, and incidentally, that's another aspect of logistics. Airlines are being killed. Mm-hmm. I mean, and, you know, shopping malls, empty. I mean, the whole thing has changed. And where we've actually got a job, we're working from home as often as not now. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, thank goodness we've got, Zoom, and we've got, we can share files across the net and all the rest. I mean, all this is absolutely wonderful. But it does mean that commercial office property is basically slaughtered. I mean,
wouldn't
say it's completely redundant, but you can see that the use of it in the future. And then you've got, are we going to commute into New York? No. What happens to the railway lines? The railway lines are literally running at a third capacity. So, our behavior has changed completely. And it is therefore not surprising that things that are suddenly in demand aren't available in terms of supply, and things which we no longer need are sitting in the docks in containers unsold. So the whole thing is a global mess, and so far nobody has really started, nobody's really thought about it in terms of commentary. I'm sure that governments have looked at it and say, oh my goodness, this is a mess. What can we do? Oh, I don't know. Nothing we can do. Put it off until tomorrow. We've got a more important thing with COVID. I'm sure that there's an element of that going on.
Yeah.
But actually, if you just look at the situation, you can see that because the supply chain, the other side of the supply chain is the payments chain.
Mm-hmm.
This is a glorious financial mess.
No, it's a disaster.
Yeah, and the banks are over-leveraged into it. They have got customers who are going bust. Their bad debts are mounting. They're geared, 10, 15 times to one on this scenario. And believe you me, the supply chain figure is equivalent to gross output. And gross output is the sum of all the transactions that goes through to making a final product. And in America, that has fallen recently from about 38 trillion, bearing in mind that GDP in America is in the order of 20 odd trillion. Mm-hmm. It's fallen from 38 trillion, nearly double that, to 34 trillion. Mm. A $4 trillion fall in gross output is an extremely serious matter.
Insolvency, massive amounts of insolvency, you would think is just around the corner here as we head into next year. And I know in the U.S., there's some laws that were passed temporarily to try to protect landlords and banks and so forth. So it's really 2021 is not going to be a cakewalk the way it looks. But just with a few minutes left, I know in your article you said there are two distinct aspects to the path forward for the dollar's demise. The first is the foreign selling. I guess a lot of this really relates to what you're talking about in the supply chain. But the point is that we were, as you pointed out, we were already in trouble before COVID. And here we are with COVID. But so just talk a little bit about what would cause foreigners to sell the dollar and then what would cause Americans to sell the dollar.
Well, we've already seen foreigners begin to sell the dollar. The trade weighted, if you just look at the chart, and it looks very, very sick. Uh-huh. I mean, it has declined and declined and declined. Foreigners, quite simply, own too many dollars. If you take their I'm working off the Treasury tick figures. If you take their total portfolio investments, it's around about $21 trillion. And if you take their cash, that should be $22 trillion. If you take their cash, it's a further $6 trillion. The total, because it's a bit more than 22 and a bit more than 6, works out at about $28.5 trillion. Now, that is in an economy which in its current shape is around about GDP of about 20 trillion. So you can see that foreigners own 140% of your GDP equivalent. Oh. Now, that, I mean, you know, they've got too many dollars. It is as simple as that. And when things start going wrong, what do foreigners do? They repatriate their money because they've got trouble back at home and mm-hmm. they need to finance that. Mm-hmm. So that's the first stage. And I think that they could well drive the dollar down in terms of its purchasing power by at least a third or even a half or potentially even more. Now, then you get the second act to this tragedy, and that is domestic users of the dollar realize that the dollar is finally declining. It's not a question mm-hmm. of prices going up, but you know, they see the dollar going down and they see, well, it's the dollar that's the problem, not prices. Mm-hmm. Now, when they begin to understand that, of course, you've got the scenario for the crack-up boom, where they say, we don't want dollars, we got to get rid of them before they go down any further.
Yeah.
And that is the final collapse of the dollar.
Yeah, then we're getting close to the end. And any sense of the timing on that, Alistair? I mean, it's hard to predict, but it sure seems that things are accelerating now.
Yes, I think that's true, Jay. And my view on timing, and it has to be a view, is that it's going to be really very rapid. I think things have happened since, say, a similar event back in 1922-23 in Germany. I mean, the whole economy is financialized. It is a financial economy. So what happens a lot more instantly. And the other thing is that people have learned through cryptocurrencies that the reason that cryptocurrencies are going up is because there is a limited supply, say, of Bitcoin compared with the dollar, which has unlimited supply. The government is basically killing the dollar. People have learned this. They didn't know this before.
We're going to have to leave it go at that. Alistair, we're out of time. As always, thank you so much for being with us. And, of course, the dollar, cryptocurrencies is one thing that's probably taking some starch out of the gold markets right now. But gold, of course, is there as well. Gold and silver and tangible assets in general, I guess, wouldn't you say?
Generally, yes. And incidentally, I know a lot of people say that gold is going down because people are switching into cryptos. I see no evidence of that other than the strictly small retail business.
Okay, very good. All right, folks. Well, that's it for this week. Thank you, Alistair, for being with us again. Next week, Lynn Alden is with me and Michael Oliver and Corwin Coe of Sitka Resources. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Novo Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Pilbara region of Western Australia. Novo has recently partnered with Sumitomo Corporation of Japan to evaluate, advance, and develop the company's Australian gold projects. With over $40 million in cash and $60 million committed from Sumitomo, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.